name is Teresa, and I'm a recovering addict. And you know what? That was real nice to hear somebody say that I'm a beautiful person, because I've been cranky, I've been evil, I've been moody, I've been all kind of different negative things, you know, but I got through them without using, and today I'm still working through them and not using. My claim date is January 20th of 91, and back then when I came around, there wasn't really too many special booklets or information on, like, we have one, illness and in times of illness and recovery. It's a white one. It's like a booklet, and it has green writing on the front of it. And I never would have thought last year when somebody had gave that to me and I started looking through it real fast that I was going to need to apply that to my life, what it was saying in there. I never would have, and I was at the house trying to find it, and I could not find it. You know, I got so much papers and stuff, just clutter, stuff everywhere. I couldn't find it, and I said, okay, I guess it's meant for me not to find it and read it again, because I'm living it to the best of my ability. And I got diagnosed with hepatitis C back in 95, 96, I used drugs intravenously, and I'm pretty sure that's how I got it. I thank God that it was hepatitis C and not HIV or both together, because I do know some people who have both, you know, and can't do any type of treatment because it's like interfering with the other one. I am so nervous. I mean, this is truly an honor and a blessing to be asked to come up here and to share on this during the time of my life that I am going through interferon treatment myself. And it was really very difficult for me. And now it's starting to, like, ease up. And they have this literature they give you, like, taking control of your therapy. And I'm finally just starting to feel like I'm taking control and doing some things in my therapy to make it much more sane for me, more serenity for me, you know, to have more peace of mind going through the different side effects that that are frustrating and sometimes very, very painful. You know what, the whole time I've been clean, when I think about it too, I've never been ill. I've never been ill the whole time I've been clean, but for now, last year, when I attempted to interfere on for 3 months, I became homicidal. I jumped on my old man and tried to kick his butt, okay? I really did. I was, like, hallucinating for 3 months that last year when I was on that interferon. I didn't realize that that's what I was going through until I was, oh, yeah. I was hallucinating. And after I did what I did to him and jumped on him and the police came, it was a big mess, paramedics came, and just a whole crazy situation that took place. Then I became suicidal. I wanted to kill myself. So I was walking around feeling this mental cloud fog in my head, hurting, my body aching, and I was just totally, I had no idea what type of medication I was taking. I had no idea how to take care of myself. I was drinking coffee, and it says stay away from caffeine. So I'm going to get out my bed with a fever, a headache, chills, and all that other stuff I'm going through. At 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and I'm going to go up Eaton Park with some of you guys, and I'm going to sit up there and drink some coffee. And then a couple hours later, I'm homicidal and suicidal. Like, you know, the whole night, 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, here I am at the hospital wanting to kill myself, crying, uncontrollable. Well, I couldn't control it, you know. And when I told them that I was an interferon patient, you know, their eyes got big, and they took me back in the back real quick, and I'm sitting back there in the emergency room, and as I sat there and started to calm down, I realized I don't want to be up there locked up on the mental ward floor. You know? And before I had went to the hospital, because I was going through so much, I had took 2 Tylenol PMs. And they had started calming me by the time I sat in the emergency room. And I tell you, that was really an interesting situation, because once I realized I didn't want to be locked up, and then I knew I had to talk my way out of there. An interferon patient in the emergency room talking about killing herself. I'm like, how the hell am I going to talk these people, these doctors and nurses, to let me go home? I'm a recovering addict. I'm a counselor. I've been in the field for 10 years. I ain't going to kill myself. The crisis is over. You know how we do that. Very well. You know how we talk intelligent and we got a little bit of knowledge about. And that's what I did to the nurse. I said, well, can you go get the doctor? You know, wipe up all the tears, put on a mask, you know, stand up there, act like you know what you're talking about. You know, so you can get out of here, because I ain't trying to have y'all lock me down. She went to the doctor. I guess he didn't want to be bothered, or I guess he was doing something else or whatever, I don't know. She came in the room in there and told me, okay, you can go home. I didn't sign nothing. Nothing. They just let me go. Yeah, I see your eyes getting big. They just let me go. Don't you know, a month and a half later, the pharmaceutical company, somebody at McKeesport Hospital got in trouble for letting an interferon suicidal patient walk out the door. McKeesport Hospital reported it to the pharmaceutical company. They found me by my social security number to my doctor, and went all the way to, got all the way to my doctor, and then they called me, Teresa, we got this report here about da 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 da. And at that time, right when they called me, I was just starting to get to the point where I'm at now in my treatment, where I'm able to get around and do things and, you know, stop. Just don't take nothing else, and we're going to refer you somewhere else. I was like, wow. Now, see, that was supposed to happen, because I didn't do the things that this I was going to bring in. They give you all this information. I didn't want to read it. You know, I didn't want to ask for help. I didn't want to keep my butt in that bed and take care of myself and let my friends go on and drink their coffee and keep my butt where I was at. I didn't want to take care of me and give myself the time that I needed. I had no idea what I was doing to myself, walking around in that state. I could have hurt somebody and really hurt myself. You know, anyway... Before I went back on, you can bet your bet, the doctor that they referred me to, they had a group of everybody in there that was getting ready to be on interferon. We're going to talk about this thing. I mean, and they informed us and told us the best ways to this and this. And I mean, it was almost like I had to go to school before they were like, okay, to put me back on. And you know what? Now I understand why they did that too. Because February the 15th or somewhere around there, I started interferon again. And you know what? I really didn't want to. I was really fighting with this thing, with this medicine and this treatment and my job and my family and my personal life. You know, and financially, how was we going to live? How was we going to survive? Because I got to go to work. You know, and then this thing up in here is going to try to tell me, well, you can handle it. Don't worry about it. Just take it one day at a time. Plus, I'm going to school taking 9 credits, too, okay? I have a 15-year-old son who's smoking weed and drinking, getting into his thing, and I'm trying to take him down to juvenile court to get him the help he needs. And I got my other son sitting down in Colorado in the Army telling me, Mom, they're going to ship us to Kuwait any minute now. Here comes that girl. Sure, why not? Let's do it now. But you know what? I truly believe that my God does things in my life for a reason, for me to learn something, for me to heal, for me to be an example. There's something that I'm supposed to do with the pain and the chaos and the insanity that I live through. I'm supposed to share it and help somebody else. Also, there's a good side to it, the peace, the serenity, getting in touch with my higher power on another level. Seriously on another level. Because I'm telling you, there were some days when I laid in that bed and I was crying about my son being shipped to Kuwait. And I'm crying about my son Teddy being up in Schuman Detention Center and we got to go to court. And I'm in the midst of the highest peak of going through these symptoms with the hot flashes, the chills, the mental fogginess, the sore. You know what? I ain't even going through all of them. Put it like this. I felt some parts of my body that I didn't even know existed. My body has been so heavy and so tired, I could barely go to the bathroom. I mean, insomnia, not being able to sleep at night. Can't remember nothing. I mean, absent-minded. And I mean, it's clearing up now a little bit better, but it comes and it goes. And you know what? I love animals. And I have two dogs. I have a Great Dane. He's mixed with a Rottweiler. He's all black. And I have a little boxer who's mixed with a pit bull. I'm telling y'all, them animals helped me. When I was stuck in that bed, crying. Wait a minute, I got to give you a little bit more detail. Because I'm telling you, you know what? This disease is something else. They don't give a damn about what's going on with us. It makes it worse. I mean, I was just like the Grinch. I was. My poor mother and my family caught hell. I told all my sponsees, please find somebody else to sponsor you for a while, because I ain't got nothing to give you right now. And that's the space where I was at. I meant to say, once I started to interfere on, I was working in drug and alcohol outreach and going to people's houses, working with active addicts. I made a horrible judgment call with this one woman. I ended up getting fired. That's when the interferon was like about maybe 4 or 5 weeks into my body, where I was starting to like deal with some of them side effects or starting to get heavy, you know. As soon as they told me they had to let me go, you know what, y'all? I truly knew that wasn't nothing but God. I truly felt relieved because I knew I had to get on the road, drive to Erie, go get my son out to rehab that I put him in, and I'm waiting for the other one to call me any minute and let me know when they're going to ship him. And I knew at that time I needed to go to meetings and not try to be out there trying to help somebody. And I also withdrew from school. It was just too much. And I believe it was supposed to. My higher power has a funny way of doing things in my life, it seems like. You know, it seems like he just takes it. He gives it to me when I'm supposed to have it, and he takes it when I ain't supposed to have it no more. No matter how I feel about it, that's my belief with my relationship with my higher power. Because I just knew I was going to finish those. Look, I had those 9 credits. 9 more credits. I had a degree. He's like, not now, my child. This is what you're going to do. And I truly believe that. And I had to, you know, call my teachers. And when I let them know, they were like, oh, interferon. They said, oh, Teresa, it was just like, no problem. We understand what that's like, you know. So I withdrew from school. I got fired from my job. I went to Erie, brought my son home. The next day, I had to call the cops, tell them to come get him because they put a warrant out for his arrest. I mean, it was like so much drama was happening in my life while I was going through all this other stuff. I failed to tell y'all that, you know, God put my mother in my house like 2 weeks before the job fired me. The doctor told her that she can no longer live by herself. So I said, okay, come on, Mom, come on over. You know you can always be here. He put her there for a reason. Thank God he put my mom was there and them two dogs. My mom fed me. And you know what? I did not call anybody in Narcotics Anonymous, truly, really, I didn't, and ask for some help. I don't know what that was until I think I talked to my one girlfriend, and she told me that she knew somebody that was doing it too and gave me her phone number, and then I finally called her. And I found out, I learned a very valuable lesson that, and I know that there's a lot of people out there doing it. Because hepatitis C is so rampant. And I just was like intolerant. I didn't want to call nobody else. What they going to come? Look, why they going to come help me for? They ain't going to come do nothing for me. I mean, I can't even do my housework. I'm going nuts in my head because, you know, I got this perfection, especially since I have dogs. You know, I got to have this clean and this like this and this in this order. My house is a mess. I'm finally starting to be able to do something to it. But first, before I even think about the house, I get my butt to a meeting now. Because I was in that bed, y'all. I truly wanted my mind to snap. I was feeling so much pain. And I was feeling my self-esteem was so low, going through what I was going through with the side effects and the crying. And I mean, I would stand downstairs, come out the kitchen and walk in the living room and bust out crying. And my mom would say, baby, go to bed. Go on upstairs and go to bed. I'll bring you something up to eat later. Go on, take a nap and go to sleep. And the funny, God is something. You know, going through all this, you know how we have that awareness? There's like something inside me looking at me like, damn, Teresa. You jacked up. That disease. You all jacked up. Your son ain't coming home. Little Teddy gonna be an addict just like you and his dad. I mean, it was just negative city. It was drunk. And I just couldn't get myself to really digest, internalize, work. Because I don't know if it was because of the way my body was feeling and all this stuff I was going through, or I just didn't want to. It's like me being miserable, going through pain, I just resisted to work any principles. And that was the most, one thing I did work was calling my sponsor. I'm telling you, I did. Delphine, please help me. I can't take this no more. I called my sponsor. I definitely, through all that, I called my sponsor. And I guess that's out of habit from calling her. You know? I had a girlfriend of mine who had 14 years clean who relapsed not too long ago. And she told me that she didn't want to call me because she knows that I was going through a lot and she didn't want to take me with her. And you know what? I kind of respect her for that. Because there were some times when I did want to use. I wanted to give up in my weakened condition and my foggy, cloudy brain. I wanted to give up. I would go from either wanting to use or wanting to kill myself. It was one or the other. So I would get back in the bed, throw the covers over my head until I got tired of being in that fetal position. And I would just lay there, hurting, until one of the dogs came upstairs and, you know what, they actually made me smile. Because one's a big Great Dane, I told you, so he just lays his head on the bed like, All right, I'm here. You know, just later, and he licked my tears. Look, I'm just woozy me. Oh, this is so terrible. I'm going to really lose my mind. You know what, y'all? I thank God. I truly thank God for working in my life the way he is. He had me speak at the spiritual retreat over in Farmington, and now I'm standing here in front of you guys, and I'm speaking to you guys about illness and recovery and how insane and sick I am. There ain't nothing really changed. It's just that I started to show a little bit more willingness, like my sponsor has been telling me, and getting up and getting out and like forcing myself to do stuff. And the doctor had told me, Teresa, no, we got you past the most critical part. Now, if you could just hang in there. Because I had told him, I said, I don't know how much longer I can do this. I don't like feeling like this. You know, we don't like feeling bad and can't do nothing about it. And, oh, God, I meant to say that when they referred me to that doctor, they also wanted me to be on psychiatric meds because I had that homicidal, suicidal incident last year. So they give me these meds. So she gives me this stuff called Klonopin, it's a narcotic. And I'm telling you, many a times I was down at the meeting sharing, I don't want to abuse my Klonopin. I don't want to get high. You know, I truly believe in this fellowship, holding on, and believing in this fellowship, believing in a higher power of my understanding, it's the only thing that kept me clean. Because I'm telling y'all, I truly wanted to snap. I wanted to kill myself. I wanted to use. I wanted to run. I wanted to escape. So when people are talking about they're in some physical pain, please be supportive with them. If they're talking about they're going through some mental health issues, please support them. I don't have my feelings hurt a couple times at meetings because people don't understand what I was going through. Oh, come on, I don't look like I should be sick, huh? I look pretty damn healthy, don't I? I was going through it. Oh, come on, did you act sick? God damn it, what a sad about. Look, you want to see these purple marks from the shots all over me? You know? Some of the times when I tremble and when I shake, you know, I mean, it's just uncontrollable, you know? But it's getting better. It's getting better, getting to the other side. It's getting better. And you know what? For as many of those who did not understand or failed to try to understand what it was like or what I was going through, still, God put others in my life that understood. Once I started getting out around people. You know, one person over there almost seen me fall down. And I didn't even realize that he noticed me do one of those, like, you kind of lose your balance type thing. You know? And I didn't even realize that he noticed it. And he's like, I told them to look out for you. I was like, how special. You know, now that was really special. You know, I was embarrassed to come around for a while, though, feeling like that and sitting at a meeting. And I feel like because I got 12 years clean and down in my area, most of the women with clean time, you know, there's a few of us. And I don't want to be sitting in the meeting with a bunch of newcomers just bitching and complaining about hurting how I feel about being on this medicine. And I know we're supposed to talk about it, and keep talking about it, but I talked to my sponsor about it and bit her ears backwards and forwards. But one thing about her I can say, she just listens. She just listens. And that was another thing, then I'm going to shut up and sit down, y'all. You know what? I know I'm a candidate for depression. I already know it. It runs in my family. You know, I know it. I know that one day I'm going to really have to be on some type of antidepressants. I know I don't do stress well. I went to school for this. Check it out. I know how it stress and how it works inside the brain and how it works inside the addicted brain and da-da-da-da-da and all the other stuff. So I accept that. Damn. Oh, man, I just forgot what I was getting ready to say. You know what? I guess I ain't supposed to say no more. I just want to thank everybody that I have some... I'm telling you, one more thing. I try not to drive much because I've had a couple near misses as far as accidents and my judgment being off, you know. But I've had people come pick me up and take me to meetings when I reached out and asked for help. And let people know what was going on with me, you know. And this fellowship is awesome. I never would have thought. I mean, I never turned 40. When I came in here, I was 23 years old. I was 22. I was 22 years old. I never turned 40. Y'all have raised me. Y'all have taught me first how to look people in the eye. Because when I came in here, it was like this. You taught me how to be a lady. You taught me how to take care of myself. You taught me how to get in touch with loving that little girl on the inside. Y'all taught me a lot of stuff. You taught me about some behaviors I needed to change and some attitudes and some ideas. You taught me a lot. You gave me a new way to live. I mean, I have a son in the army over in Baghdad. Who'd have thought? He gonna come home a hero. Who'd have thought? This junkie here. My 15-year-old son today, he's changing his ways slowly but surely. But we're building a relationship. Who'd have thought? I never would have thought. Let alone never would have thought I would love dogs the way I do. I tell you, you just never know. I'm going to keep coming back. I'm going to hold on for the ride. I ain't going to let go day at a time. And I want to thank you all for listening to me.
My name is Bob, and I'm an addict. And I'm going to introduce the second speaker, which is Mike. Say your name, Serenity. It's Mike's home group.
Okay, Mike.
Hey, Mike. I'm Mike. Hey, you bring up the fact I'm missing my home group tonight. I was thinking about that. I just became the secretary out to my home group, and so I got the bag of stuff, and I made calls. I had like a total seriously busy week and working real hard, and I had the bag of stuff, and so I called other home group members and told them, man, the bag's on my porch. You got to come and unlock the meeting. I hope they did, and, you know, now I'm worried about it, but I don't know. You know, I got an email from Rich telling me that he wanted me to speak at the convention and to talk on this topic. And you know, I wrote him back about my prejudices. I've been to some in times of illness meetings, and you know, I've been a member of Narcotics Anonymous for over 16 years and clean continuously since I've been here. So. You know, I have ideas about, like, you know, going to the end times illness meeting and, like, what the qualifications are the person talking has to have, you know. And I wrote him back and told him that I didn't think I was qualified to speak on the topic. And that's my prejudice. That's my bullshit. I don't know what y'all want out of end times illness speaker or, like, what you really expect. I got some things to say. You know, and basically it's come down to, you know, the things that... When the pamphlet in times of illness was being worked on, and I was working on a literature committee, I ran across some people that were cynical. You know, like, I have prejudices and ideas about recovery and about addiction, about getting better and living with the disease of addiction and every other problem based on what y'all have shown me and taught me and ideas that I didn't have before I came here. I was friends with a guy named Dave, and he was really mad about the pamphlet. He said, man, fuck that pamphlet. what they should have called it was in times of AIDS. And that's what it was for. And he had AIDS and he was mad about the pamphlet. He said he didn't like it. And I knew that I liked him. You know, I knew that I really liked him. And so I ran into him a couple times through doing some service, and I watched him get sick. He said, "Hey, look at my face. This is an outbreak from AIDS. I'm dying." And he said, "Not every addict seeking recovery is going to find a new way of life. Is not going to get the chance at life." And that's valuable information, I guess. You know, I don't know whether he was beaten because of his attitude. You know, I've met people that have had HIV virus for 20 years, and they said, "Well, you know, I found out that I had HIV virus, and I quit smoking cigarettes, and I started doing the right nutrition, and I, you know, physical, mental, spiritual disease, I started taking care of myself because what I learned about it is what he told me. What I learned about it was take care of myself, and I got the best chance against this virus." You know, and I don't really have any firsthand experience about that except that, my early clean time, I met people and I loved them and I hugged them like you told me to, that if we would love each other and hug each other, that we help each other stay clean, live the best lives we possibly can. And then I'd turn around and I said, "Hey, where's, you know, so-and-so? Where's my friend?" You know, I stop in a meeting, I don't stop in so much. And they'd say, "Well, he ain't here no more." And it was very sad for me, you know. And so, I came here really young. I think that what I know about the... I say really young. I don't know if that's, you know, depending upon where you're standing, it may or may not be really young. At one point in time, I was a part of a home group, and we were doing an H&I meeting in an adolescent institute, and I looked around, and there were 20 people that got clean between 14 and 20 and had, like, an average clean time of 3 or 4 years clean. You know, and I don't know. I know it has everything to do with us just getting together and saying, "Yeah, you have a right to be here." You know, that my early time here in Narcotics Anonymous, I felt like I was different. You know, I asked people, "What's your drug of choice? What kind of drugs do you use?" And what I know about that question is, I want to know why I'm different so I don't have to be here. You know, I've always tried to find a reason not to fit in here, not to recover, even though it was very obvious that I was an addict from the moment I was here, from the moment before I was here. You know, but I had denial coming in here that I wasn't an addict, like reasons why I couldn't have been. I was born in the 60s, so I grew up in the 70s, early 80s, saw these health education films in public school, and, you know, back in the late 70s, early 80s, they tried to scare you out of using drugs. You know, I saw film strips where the guy, and where they had, like, the audio, and they said, you know, the drug addict is, you know, uses a syringe and does heroin, and if you are that, you are. And so I figured, well, if you don't do that, then you're not, you know, and it's not true. You know, that totally an addict. You know, like I look back when I was 13 years old and I was getting runs for all my friends. Like I worked everybody, all the guys getting the runs. And it's just really funny that I never spent any money on alcohol. That was like one of the early drugs that I did. I can't say it's the first because I don't remember. I don't remember like junior high, high school. It's not there. You know, there's bits and pieces and stuff. You know, the disease of addiction, the way it progressed for me, I really, I didn't have time to get anything or really lose anything. I mean, like, you know, all the potential that I thought my life was going to be, the dreams that I had, the things I wanted to be. I wanted to be a scientist because when I was a kid, I watched Bugs Bunny cartoons and there was the red hairy monster and the mad scientist. And I liked the mad scientist. He was cool. And I wanted to be the scientist, you know. I guess I turned into the hairy monster. You know, like I look at my household where I was growing up when I got clean, and no one turned their back to me. My mom carried her pocketbook around. If stuff was missing, they knew who took it, you know, and I'd help them look for it. You know, it's really funny to think back to like this time where my dad was talking about he was going on this business trip and the money he had stashed was missing. And did anybody know where it was? And I said, "Well, I don't know, Dad. Where's your hiding spot?" You know, and I'm, you know, was not a very good liar. You know, well, anyway, coming to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and finding my place in here. That, you know, I thought I had to, like, make up stories about, like, why I was here. To make myself sound worse than I was, so I could qualify with the people who told me I really didn't fit in here. Because there were a number of people that were like, you know, you look too young to be here, you know, to really have had a problem. There were people who told me I didn't belong. And, you know, and I don't know, what was up with that. I probably had a lot to do with them being jealous, you know. Because I met some people that, like, most of their life had gone by already, and they were mad that they were getting, you know, had a couple years clean and were in their 50s or whatever, and mad that there were kids here. And I mean, you know, I don't know if it was just that or whether they were just angry people. You know, I think that I had a lot of anger, and the way I dealt with y'all, you know, had a lot to do with the anger. And I really am just so grateful that people, you know, there was a lot of the message in, you know, let us love you until you can learn to love yourself, you know, that I heard that. And what happened then was people shared the message that they had about recovery from the disease of addiction, regardless of who was sitting in the room. They talked about how they stayed clean. They talked about how they changed. They talked about how they got better. They gave me the information the same addict's going to use again. And they told me this is a physical, mental, spiritual disease, emotional disease. You know, and I know that, you know, we got the 12 steps. They say that's how we recover. That's, you know, how we recover spiritually. You know, and we don't actually have, like, a program for recovering mentally here in Narcotics Anonymous. We don't have specific shit you got to do to recover physically. You know, we don't have a specific program, but we do have the 12 steps. We have the 12 traditions. That's our method for recovery, the program. And, you know, like, I've looked around at people in Narcotics, because y'all are my examples. I didn't know how to live coming here, you know. I didn't have anything. I didn't graduate high school. I didn't have anything. You know, I didn't have a car. I didn't have a job. I wasn't employable. You know, and it was after I got clean that I got my high school diploma. And I went to college and did that for a while. I got a whole ton of credits and no degree. A whole ton of credits, you know, and probably I got excuses as to why I don't have the degree, you know. You know, like, I think that is being on that literature committee, and we were working on two things, like the for those in treatment and in times of illness. And I went anyway, and I helped work on it. And I don't really remember, you know, what kind of input my group in the Delaware County put in for the in times of illness, but my friend Jack said that we got like two or three whole paragraphs in the for those in treatment thing, and you know, like they had like a personal story in times of illness in the review stuff, and they had like stuff about, you know, like getting dental work done, and you know, I had like 3 months clean. I had abscessed teeth because I didn't brush my teeth when I was using, and so I had to have a root canal done, and they gave me some medicine, said, you know, a prescription said go take this medicine because you got a lot of pain with that thing in your mouth, and you know, you'll need my dad to fill the prescription, and I don't know if I took one or none. You know, like I read the bottle after, I might have took one and said, look, this isn't for me anyway because I'm staying clean and I'm going to take Advil. Do you know what I mean? To get through the pain of this root canal thing. And I think from that point on, like I'll go to all the fillings that I've had done at the dentist and stuff like that. I don't even get the Novocaine because I figured out to me, the shot hurts more than, you know, if they're hurting your mouth, if they're hurting my teeth, they're near the nerves. And the nerves, see, now I don't know. I don't recommend it for everybody. You know what I mean? But if they hit your nerves, they're fucking up. I mean, that's just, you know, and by not taking the Novocaine, I never had to go, am I drooling to myself for like a couple hours after? That was like the only difference for me. But, you know, get some fillings done and stuff. Yeah, I mean, like, that's about the extent of, like, my in times of illness stuff. Like, up until, like, about 9 years clean, I was living with my sponsor, and he said, oh, man, I just got back from the doctors, and they did this ultrasound on me, and I've got this kidney disease, and it's a messed-up kidney disease. They tell me I'm going to die in 3 years. And so I said, well, holy shit, that's a bad disease, you know? And so I said, well, what's it called? And he gave a bunch of different names for it, and so I looked it up. Had the internet in my house, I looked it up, I said, well, we'll learn about the disease. Do you know what I mean? And so I learned everything there was to know about it. I told him everything that I knew about it, which was different than what he walked away from the doctor's office knowing. I said, this is what you need to know, I think. I printed out a bunch of different stuff because his was like, you got it, you're going to die. Do you know what I mean? And every time that I've heard that you got it and you're going to die, people give up. Do you know what I mean? You know what I learned in here? I learned hope. Because it wasn't like the only thing I ever knew about hope prior to coming to Narcotics Anonymous was I hope the guy didn't run away with my money. Do you know what I mean? Hope was like, you know, something you did, not something you got. Like, and after coming here for a while, like I'd come here and hope became tangible. Do you know what I mean? Like hope was something I could get right here. I'd just cop a bag of hope every meeting I'd go to. I mean, that's the way I looked at it. I was here to get some more hope because it would run out or whatever. I didn't know where it went because I forgot. I had the hope that I could stay clean, that life could be better. You know, and like just dealing with him and like that situation, I started seeing this young lady, and I've been over her house a couple times, and one day her mom pulled me aside and said, she's got hepatitis C. Yo, run, while you can. She's got hepatitis C. And it's, you could get it. All right, so I went home and I got out the internet and I typed up hepatitis C. And I learned, and it said that it wasn't a sexually transmittable disease. And it said it was, you know, hepatitis is a disease that affects your liver. And it's funny, I'm working at this, I'm a scientist, and I'm working with this guy, and he was doing some micro work over at, like, Purdue or something, the chicken farm. But he just got his degree in microbiology. And we're trying to test this chemical we got against some different viruses in the world, like the coronavirus, which is the one that causes that disease called SARS, where people die from breathing it in, and also hepatitis. And so I like learned all this stuff that like hepatitis A, B, and C, the only thing they have in common is that they attack your liver. That's all hepatitis means. But they're all different viruses. It's not even in the same family. You know, different things. I ended up moving in with this lady, and she had, you know, I have a daughter, and she has her son, and so we had this blended family. I know that Narcotics Anonymous really identifies with that blended family thing, because we're not good at having relationships. That's like a totally different meeting entirely. But, you know, so I was living with her, and she ended up getting a hepatologist guy and was getting this. They said, look, you know, you've got chronic hepatitis, and we want you to take this interferon. So the literature came. It was like a booklet thing inside the medicine. You pulled it out this far, and this wide, you had to read it with a magnifying glass, right? And so she was just like, you know, knew what the doctor said. So I started reading it, and it was kind of crazy because you say, well, you look good to me. You know, you look fine. You're not sick or whatever, So she's taking her medicine, doing the subcutaneous shots in her belly and her thighs, I guess. I don't really remember. And her hair was falling out. And she had really long hair, like down to below her elbows, and her hair started falling out in clumps. And I don't know how many times I hugged her coming out of the shower because she's like got fists of hair in her hands and crying. My hair is falling out. It's one of the things it says in the literature. You know, I think that if you know what your life is, you know, I mean, like the whole thing I was saying about physical, mental, spiritual, you know, that's who we are. You know, and you need to know what's going on with you and the people that you love so you know how to act and you know what's right and you know what you got to go run to the doctor about. And, you know, well, we knew your hair was going to fall out, but, it was sad, you know. Get it cut short so it's supposed to, pretend like it's supposed to be like that or whatever, if you like it like that. She did that for like 15 months, I guess, the interferon. And so other than that, like we did like what regular recovering addicts do. We were involved in service, going to area service and going to home groups and meetings and working steps with sponsors and sponsees and have a recovery house and people come over anytime, drink coffee. I mean, that's our house, you know. And after a bit of that, they said, hey, look, your tests say that you got the hepatitis. It's back. You know, the levels were low or whatever. Hepatitis eats liver, right? So they said, look, we want you to do this. It's interferon and ribavirin, the antiviral drug, those pills, right? And so I read all the literature about that. And You know, we are having a great time in Narcotics Anonymous, going different places. I think that, you know, through the end of like 99, we went to like conventions and we went to Europe because I hooked up with some NA people in like Sweden and Denmark, and so we went on this. We were in like Georgia or something for a convention down there, and we were in Sweden and then Denmark and just met like, at, you know, you can say it's a worldwide fellowship, but wait till you meet people who don't even really speak English very well, and they just want to know how the hell you did it so they can sit down. They want to tape record it too, so they can sit.